Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncnursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
Hi everyone, I'm Brielle, Senior Editor at Oncology Nursing News. Today, we'll hear from Jody Kellis, Department Chair and Professor in Interpersonal Family and Health Communication at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Kellis and her team conducted research on communication needs for patients, caregivers, and oncology nurses. From her findings, she offers advice on how nurses can improve the cancer journey for everyone involved. The key takeaway? Reframe hope. Can you tell me a little bit about your research, what you looked at, and why this was important research to conduct?
I run a research lab called Narrative Nebraska, in which we look at the links between communicated sense making and health and well-being. So most of my research is about narratives and storytelling in the context of family, caregiving, and often in health contexts, but to understand the links between how the ways in which the stories that we tell, both the content and the process, help to explain our individual relational and interactional health and well-being. So that's a bit about what we do generally. When we worked on this project, we were actually interested in creating a translational storytelling intervention. So I have a theory called communicated narrative sense-making theory, and it looks at retrospective storytelling, which is the significant and lasting impact of the stories that we hear and tell. Interactional storytelling, which is the verbal and nonverbal processes of the stories that we tell and the ways in which those processes help to explain health and well-being. And then translational storytelling is using narrative theories, methods, and empirical results to create interventions designed to improve participant well-being. So when we set out to do this study, we were interested in doing some translational work, some intervention work with family caregivers and medical providers and patients or survivors in the context of cancer. But we really wanted to first understand what were the communication and relational opportunities and challenges as they manifest across those three sets of what we call stakeholders or agents in cancer care. So as I said, family caregivers, survivors, and medical practitioners. And so we set out to understand what were those relational and communication opportunities and challenges from each of their different perspectives, since most of the research to date had looked at each of those groups individually. And then our second research question asked about what, if any, differences manifest among those groups of stakeholders in the communication and relational challenges that they experienced.
So tell me a little bit about what you found. I know that you said in your study that cancer is communal. Tell me a little bit about what that means and ultimately what your findings were.
Yeah. So like I said, like we say in the article, one of the things that we were really looking for is, were there any differences between these stakeholders in cancer care? But the overwhelming, overarching finding was that all of our participants, no matter what their role was in cancer, seemed to idealize the experience of cancer as communal. And what we mean by that is cancer experienced in community and relationship with others, consisting of support and communication that facilitates community. So that was our overarching super theme that we identified, so that across cancer care and across cancer agents, people really wanted and felt that the ideal experience was to experience cancer in community with other people. We found, though, that not everyone experienced it in that way. So even though that was everyone's ideal, the people that we interviewed, there were four sets of communication behaviors that helped to either facilitate that experience for people or detract from it. So those four behaviors were support, so social support, presence, which we define as being there, showing up, the framing or reframing of hope, and the communication of perspective taking. So those were the four behaviors that really tended to either contribute to or detract from the ability to experience cancer in community with other people.
Yeah, so tell me, were there certain factors that or issues that detracted from that cancer is communal thing that you found across the board, or was it different for the caregivers, for the survivors, and for the clinicians?
Well, you know, we did find when after we analyzed all our data, we did a cross case data matrix analysis, and we did find some differences across roles. So we found that all stakeholders wanted the experience of cancer as communal, and all reported various levels of experiencing cancer as communal. But we coded all of the interviews after we were done as either communal, those that were most characterized by the behaviors that enabled the communal stance, those that were isolated, those that were mostly characterized by behaviors that detracted from cancer as communal, and then also as ambivalent, those that had both factors. So some contributions and then some limitations to being able to experience cancer as communal. And what was really interesting, probably the most interesting thing that we found, was that although providers, caregivers, and patients all experienced cancer as communal, they differed slightly in that group as to which behaviors really enabled a communal cancer experience for them. So for example, providers really focused on perspective taking and reframing hope. So they were really focused on support and community through team-based care. Whereas caregivers really focused in on the communal nature of cancer based on the factors of openness, presence, love, and support. So when they were talking about the communal cancer experience, it was really about those communication behaviors. And then finally, survivors who had a communal experience were really united by themes of positivity. So survivors experienced cancer as communal more often when their interviews and the behaviors that they talked about were really focused on positivity and hope. The most interesting finding, I think, in terms of differences were that caregivers were the most isolated of all the stakeholders in cancer care. So whereas most of our providers and patients experienced cancer as communal, I think it was like 41% of our caregivers experienced a more isolated journey. So where they really met those barriers to creating a communal orientation toward cancer across their experience. So for those people, their interviews were really characterized by a sense of perceived isolation. So where people were not engaging in presence, where other people in their circles were in denial, whether that was the patients or the family social network, who would not allow the caregivers to engage in the communication that they felt they needed to make sense of cancer and often their loved ones' impending death. And so that was characterized by avoidance. And then they also talked a lot about false hope, that when people were trying to be supportive, and trying to reframe hope, one of the things that was a detractor to experiencing cancer as communal was potentially well-intentioned supporters providing false hope, or even practitioners providing false hope and suggesting treatments that ultimately were not successful and that the caregivers felt could have been ceased far before and potentially could have facilitated a better death. We did find providers, caregivers, and patients, all of whom had an ambivalent experience where they experienced both cancer as communal and barriers to that. And so that's in the findings too.
So that's really interesting about the notion of false hope. And we have a sister publication called Cure, and it's for patients, survivors, and caregivers. And we've had some of our people write in about that too. So our particular audience is focused on oncology nurses. Do you have any advice on how oncology nurses can maybe realize if they are providing false hope and everything's going to be fine, it's not going to hurt at all? And if they realize that they're doing that, what can they do to change but still support the patient and the caregiver?
Yeah, part of what I learned in doing this research, because I'm a communication researcher, not an oncology nurse, and I think that oncology nurses are unsung heroes in this process. I think that they have to deal with a lot of the family conflict that often occurs in the cancer journey, and they just have to do so much of the hard work. What I learned that was really interesting, and some of this I learned both from oncology nurses, but also from palliative providers in our study, was that what is more helpful to focus in is a different kind of hope. So we have another publication from this data set in which we look at hope in particular, and I'm happy to send that to you, Brielle. But what we found there is that reframing hope in a way that focuses on what do you hope for your life right now? What do you hope that you could do, you know, with your family? What do you hope for what a good death might look like? What do you hope that your comfort level might be today? What do you hope that you could go do, you know, this weekend with your family? That focusing on that kind of reframing tended to be conceived better by the participants in our study than were people who were providing false hope. So false hope came in, you know, really two different forms, you know, sort of unuseful treatments that didn't seem necessary, but then also when people would provide, you know, sort of platitudes or things. You know, one of the participants talked about the fact that this is an oncologist who would hear from family members, like, don't tell them they're going to die. Just tell them that we're going to treat them. We'll lie to them, say, you know, we don't want them to know that they're this sick. So that's a quote from one of our participants. And the idea is that patients deserve, you know, from the oncologist's point of view, patients deserve to know the truth. And from a family caregiver's point of view, she said, why give him all this false hope? Because it's not going to change. Like, don't have more surgeries, don't give more treatment if it's not going to make a difference. And so I think that people really appreciated openness and honesty. They certainly want support, they want care, but it may be about reframing hope rather than providing false hope, so that those of us that go into professions where we want to provide care for other people often want to provide positivity. But from what I learned in this study, sometimes the best kind of positivity is reframing hope to be about a different type of hope. So rather than particularized hope, which is focused on cure or, treatment, that families really benefited from a focus on generalized hope, which is more about comfort and the potential of a good experience and then possibly a good death. Those of us who have experienced the cancer journey, myself included, I lost my dad to pancreatic cancer in 2012, to understand that we can communicate in ways that might facilitate everyone's experience of a better way to go through cancer is empowering. So knowing that showing up and being there, knowing that providing support, helping to reframe hope in the way that I just talked about, and really seeing things and then operating from the perspective of the other person can be really an empowering thing to helping facilitate cancer's communal, because I think that cancer is such a difficult journey. And the thing I'm grateful for about what we found in this article are a specific set of behaviors that might enable us to improve the cancer experience for ourselves.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.